Anybody? See, because Derek's a short guy.
I hate you.
He did send a really funny picture of his son wearing...
The Yankees and the Red Sox.
That was good.
Danny's... I don't know what they did to... Must have pinched him. Or maybe he started crying when they put Red Sox stuff on him. Where'd you get this?
What's that? That was in the pile you gave me.
No kid.
No kid.
Well, I don't know how that could have happened. Are we rolling?
Yeah. I'm just kind of...
Vibbert yesterday worked from 3:30 in the morning until 7 at night, didn't you, Vibs?
And then started up again at 9 p.m. after I slept for a little bit.
You only slept for 2 hours?
I slept for 2 hours, started working at 9, fell back asleep, woke up midnight, fell back asleep, woke up at 3.
What's with Boston College?
Grinding. The same thing that you have with Clemson, I have with Boston College. I assume you went to Boston College, or you went to Clemson online, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Actually, when I first bought a Clemson sweatshirt, it was before the online existed.
Ah.
But yeah.
Jake likes to say that I'm an old guy.
I am.
When did you...
You're not. I'm the old guy, relative, pal. Right?
When did you start liking Clemson?
I mean, ever since I was a little kid, but really passionately, early 90s, 91, 92.
I remember Clemson... Well, of course, I remember Clemson against Ohio State.
Yeah, Woody Hayes.
Woody Hayes' last game. Oh no, Woody!
Charlie Bauman,
wham, right in the neck.
Do you know what? Do you know who supposedly? This is the weirdest irony of all.
And that was the Schleister team.
Wait,
right?
Did Woody Hayes die in that game?
No. Charlie Bauman intercepted Art Schleister. First of all, it goes way back. Woody liked Art Schleister, but he was such an amazing talent as far as a college quarterback goes that they knew they had to throw the ball. But Woody hated to throw the ball at 3 yards in a cloud of dust. That's true. And it just pissed him off because Bauman intercepted a pass, and they were going to lose the bowl game. And Woody Bauman just ran over toward the – just kind of ended up near the Ohio State sideline. And Woody reached out after he clotheslined him. Right in the throat.
So Woody Hayes went into, like, seclusion for, like, you know, 4 days or whatever.
Yeah,
and you know who supposedly is the one that called him and said, you've got to come out and publicly apologize and make good on this. For the sake of your legacy.
Bobby Knight.
Yes.
No kidding. I was
another example where Knight can't follow his own advice.
Yeah.
I was at the Bobby Knight, Gene Katie thing last Friday at the Palladium.
How was it?
I thought it was interesting. I didn't think it went long enough.
Really? Katie finally let his hair go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gray now.
Katie looks
it's been a few him. Years.
Yeah, but I
Katie said the Boilermaker. Katie looks great, I think, now.
Defending his hair. You are terrible.
I'll stand up for Katie's hair.
Good
I've
luck.
I'd heard for a while now that, you know, that Knight's not 100% there and that part of the reason they brought Katie in is to kind of protect him a little bit and
take over
when Knight goes wayward.
And Bob Hamill was there too, one of his closest friends. But Knight did. Knight realized. I don't know. Maybe this is me being cynical, but he realized that, you know, these people are here, and it was packed. Obviously, I mean, and he got up a couple times and walked toward the audience because they had the chairs set out,
right.
the 3-4 man, you know. And it was almost like a stand-up routine. He'd be talking, and the referee, Jesus Christ, the referee came over there, and he said, you know, and he would walk toward the audience. And so I thought that was cool that he thought enough to engage the audience a little bit other than sitting so far away. So, but they had great stories, man, about
I'm sure. I mean,
yeah.
The stories. I said when we had Katie on, I said, you know, I get this – great image of you and Knight driving around across country in a Studebaker, like Fozzie and Kermit. And Katie's like, I'd do it. That'd be great. Just the two of them driving along, you know, Thelma and Louise style.
But it was weird when it was over. And I don't remember when they came. I think they came out on stage from the same side. But at the end, Hamill and Knight went off stage left, and Katie went off stage right by himself. So I don't know if that was some sort of statement or not, but that's what they did.
Yeah,
Katie's doing more than just that with him, though, right? I mean, aren't they doing more than just the one speaking deal?
I thought they were going to go around the state or something. Is that right?
Like a tour or something?
Could be.
I mean, it's you know, not to be crass, but it's a moneymaker. I mean, those the tickets we had were so.
Was it full? Did you say?
Yeah, it was full. I'd never been to the Palladium before. It was beautiful.
I went 2 years ago and it was full, and it was just Bob Knight. Also,
has he done that before?
Yeah. But it was just him, and he didn't get up and engage the crowd. He just sat there.
Was it him and Hamill, or just him?
Yeah, him and Hamill.
You know the one. So the one that he did when you went,
right?
So Leary works for the catering company, or at the time was working for the catering company. That was
Todd Leary, who used to play for.
I always try to keep an eye on Todd Leary. Leary.
No,
never mind. Go ahead.
Very leery of him.
Knight found out that Leary was working on the catering crew and said that he wouldn't do it if Leary was in the building. So Leary's like, he's not going to know I'm here, and they're like, doesn't matter.
You know what? He was on the Bob and Tom show. It was a studio ago, so I'm going to say at least 10 years ago.
At least almost probably 15.
And Pat brought him in, his son, Pat Knight. And Pat, I don't know if Coach Knight has always been unbelievably gracious to the Bob and Tom show. Right. I don't know, you know, and he doesn't have to be, obviously. He doesn't have to do shit. But, I mean, he's always been very kind to us and thanked us profusely when we've had him on the air. But he came into the studio, and first of all, I was astonished at how big he is.
Oh,
you have no idea.
And people
how big
always
this
say,
guy
like,
is.
I wouldn't let Knight push me. And I'm like, have you ever seen him? He's the most. He is incredibly physically imposing.
And that's the other thing I was going to say. When the intimidation just he doesn't have to do anything.
100% accurate.
It just rolls.
He controls the room as soon as he walks in.
He walks in, and you best recognize that Coach Knight is in the room.
Yeah, no doubt.
And the only one who wasn't like was Bob. God love him. And Bob Kavoyan, and he and Coach Knight started talking about fishing, and it was it was on. So he had a great time. But
Pat was my neighbor in college.
No kidding.
And we lived in neighboring apartments, and one Friday night, stone cold sober, obviously Pat's from Bloomington. He's like, man, we need to knock the wall down out of this and just make it one big apartment. And we're like eating pizzas, and like 45 minutes later, Pat came in with a pair of goggles on and a buzzsaw and was like, let's do it. And, vroom, vroom, and we went to White Rabbit and bought the Greg Brady love beads and just...
You can't knock these walls down, Jerry. These are
load-bearing walls.
You can't do that.
Did you get your deposit back?
We had a guy. There was a guy from Linton, Indiana, named Linton. I don't even know his real name.
Linton.
And Linton had a drywall company, and so he gave him two tickets to a game and an autographed picture of Bob Knight to come seal it up at the end of the year, and he fixed it.
See, that's what this country was built on.
That's right.
It's all you do about for bartering. Me, I'll do for you. It's bartering. Hi, welcome to the Chick McGee Show on Podcast One. Our guest today is the other half of the Derek Query and Schultz Show, the Derek Schultz, Jake Query Sports Show on Fox Sports 97.5. It's Jake Query. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Salutations. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
It's nice to be here.
Jake has, I was just thinking we should call this, of course, who is this?
This is the elect.
The elect.
That is correct.
I have not heard of these guys. I'm writing it down.
They're local, right?
They are?
Actually, I think they're friends of Jake's, actually.
I got to know them just strictly from being like a
super
groupie.
Fan,
yeah okay. Basically.
I didn't vote for them.
Vibbert,
you were consulted.
Being the Chick McGee of the Chick McGee Show, he's being a contrarian, causing trouble.
The elect. I guess they're not the elected.
I got you.
The elect. Okay. All right. I wrote that down. I was thinking, Jake, this show should be, of course, he does sports on 97.5 in the afternoons from 3 to 7, but he has fascinating stories about fascinating people.
I hope so, right?
On and on and on. Yeah, not just sports, but as you've already heard, he tore a wall down in college. He hung out with Pat Knight. Well, not hung out. What do we say? He crushed puss and huffed dank with Pat Knight.
Is it okay if we say that?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. They did it. They did it together.
Pat's the best. Pat's a cool guy, man.
He was. He was a real nice one. I only met him when he brought his dad in that one afternoon. But seemed like a sweet guy.
You know what's interesting is you were talking about Bob Knight and just the. Before that, we were talking about Woody Hayes at Ohio State. I think, Chick, that you could make the argument that in 81 to 95. That Bob Knight was as beloved and as powerful a sports figure to his state as any person within their state in the U.S. at any time. And Woody Hayes or maybe Bear Bryant would be the only two that I could think that would even be close.
Absolutely. I mean,
especially
still,
the polarization that they created.
Woody, after the Charlie Bauman Clemson incident, Woody was on the down low. I would say, I don't know. I want to say 12 to 18 months is what jumped into my brain, but it might not have been that long. I mean, because diehard Ohio State fans are like, oh, Bauman guy, that punched him too, you know, shit like that. But it wasn't too long until they started lining up, like Archie Griffin and Tom Cousineau and Cornell Green? Who is that? Not Cornell Green, the quarterback. Anyway, Chris Carter and all these guys who had deep Ohio State roots start. Well, you know, Woody was on he was off his medication that night. It was for blood pressure, and it causes him to lash out. I'm like, okay, the spin started, and it wasn't too much longer after that. Then, of course, he got fired, but, I mean, he dotted the I and Script Ohio and all that. I mean, he was, you know, and they had the Woody Hayes bobbleheads, and yeah, he was.
I mean, he's still a cast.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's a mythic.
Cult-like figure there, right?
He's a mythic figure now. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as well as Urban Meyer has done, obviously. I mean, Woody's the man, that's for sure.
You said Die Hard, and all I can think about is Bruce Willis and Die Hard now. That's all I've been thinking about when you're talking.
which, by the way, there's always this debate, Vibber. Let me ask you this. I don't even know where this debate came about. People debate if it's a holiday movie.
Yes, it's a Christmas movie.
How did Die Hard become a Christmas movie?
It is a Christmas
movie. It revolves around a Christmas
party. Because there's a Christmas party. His wife's at the Christmas party, and there's Christmas music.
He's got a big stuffed bear for her.
I mean, I think The Fugitive starts out at some sort of a Christmas deal, right? But I don't necessarily see that being played during the holidays.
Well, but in Die Hard's defense, being a Christmas movie, it only takes place for like that one afternoon to the next morning, right?
And he uses like the holiday duct tape on his back to tape the gun to his back.
Yeah, well, nothing says the holidays like that.
Like duct tape, Christmas duct tape.
Haven't you all wanted to duct tape a gun to your back and use it in the holidays?
I tell you this, I did not go see Die Hard. Nope, wouldn't it? I did not go see Die Hard in the movie, so I thought, I like Bruce Willis, but it's an action movie. I tend to be a little deeper than that, Jeff. You know that about me.
I didn't see
sensitive movies. So I watched Die Hard all by myself just for that. I didn't expect anything. I say that Die Hard changed everything because think about how many Die Hard-like movies. Like there's this guy on a boat, on a train, trapped in a building, on and on and on. It's like Die Hard on a boat. It's like Die Hard. I mean, it's an incredible. If you haven't seen it, it's a great movie.
You know, behind Chick on the wall here inside your palatial studio, there's a message board that says, like a dry erase board that says, Happy Holidays with a Christmas tree. So this is, in turn, a Christmas podcast. Right?
That possibly, if we use the formula that Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Exactly right.
It honestly looks a lot like the tape that he used to tuck. I'm serious. It's like white with the Happy Holidays.
Uh-huh. All right. And the mistletoe. All right. Favorite movie, Jeff Vibber, Die Hard. Go ahead. Favorite movie, Die Hard? No.
No. Of all time?
Fast and the Furious 6?
Whatever Fast and the Furious movie I'm watching at the moment.
I can't wait till this is over.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah.
I'd say Training Day with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke.
No kidding.
But I'm kind of biased because I've indirectly made out with Ethan Hawke, so that's...
Excuse me?
Whoa.
I think I shared it on this podcast.
You made out with a girl who used to date Ethan Hawke?
Well, I dated a girl who dated his half-brother, and I assume during the holidays they, like, kissed on the lips on accident maybe, but...
Huh. Okay, Trading Day. Jason, your favorite movie?
Well, comedy I have to go with probably like a Dumb and Dumber. Regular movie, and this kind of goes back to your childhood, because, you know, sure, there's been great movies the past 20 years, but I loved Indiana Jones.
That first Indiana Jones, I remember seeing the trailer where he's out in front. The pickup truck or the Nazi truck is rolling down the highway, and he's in front of the truck, hanging on the grill, and he reaches up with the hood ornament, and the hood ornament snaps off, and he disappears.
He goes under it.
And that's the trailer, and it's like, oh, I've got to see this movie. That's a good one.
I haven't seen – like, does it –
It holds up. I just showed it to my 13-year-old daughter. I've been trying to show them the movies from my era, but
the only bad part about it is the female role is so whiny and can't do anything for herself. It's annoying.
Although Karen Allen in the first one is much better than Mrs. Spielberg.
The girl in the second one is the worst.
I wonder how she kept that job. Yeah. Well, remember when they had the kid from the Goonies in one of them, right?
Short round.
That's two. Temple of Doom.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, we've stumbled on Jason as a
I haven't Indiana watched Temple Jones of Doom forever, but that Temple of Doom always kind of gets shit on as kind of the crappy one.
That was the third, right?
No, that was the second.
What was the third?
The third one is when the dad,
Sean Connery,
and
Jake, you might not know this, but ladies and gentlemen, Sean Connery in Indiana Jones. We called the dog Indiana. It wasn't his name, remember?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. No. I like the third one. I liked it.
What's your favorite movie, Jake?
Now, see, I'm going to go with Jason here in the fact that you have to go with, there are two answers, like my favorite movie or the movie that I enjoyed at the highest amount based on the time in which I saw it, uh-huh. in which the Muppet movie would be high on the list. But
it's a good movie.
However, Grand Canyon is probably my favorite movie.
Oh, okay.
But all I also, right. Shawshank Redemption and, of course, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
All right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. When did you graduate from high school?
91.
91.
Jake and I are the exact same age. We're 6 months apart, but we had the exact same, you know, we grew up, we talked for an hour a month ago about E.T.,
yeah.
The impact E.T. had, how big it was, or
how
memories
long
of,
it was in the theater.
How long it was in the theater. Yeah. It was in the theater for like a year and a half.
Was it real? Well, that you couldn't, I mean, a video cassette of that movie would have been $120 probably or something.
I remember, you know, back then it was, you know, get on the waiting list now for when it comes out on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
My neighbors, Lee Lurton, who I grew up across the street from, actually he was the first owner of a camcorder and went into E.T. and videotaped it. Bootleg stuff.
No way.
Yeah. Now, in terms of Fast Times, I'll tell you something interesting. A year ago, I was in L.A., and I'm like, I'm going to go see where everything was filmed for Fast Times.
Oh, okay.
So I went to The Point, which was the dugout, and I went, you know, all over. Well, I went to, if you remember the movie, Brad and Stacy's house.
Right.
So I go to the house. I knock on the front door. This lady answers, and I'm like, hey, this is the Fast Times house. And she's like, oh, yeah. Really nice lady, but I found this interesting.
Call the police.
Seriously. But she was super nice, and she told me this, which I found interesting. She said, actually, if you want to know the truth, my husband and I renovated the interior of the house recently, and so had the people who we bought it from, which were not the people that owned it in the early 80s. And she said, we needed to know where some of the wall studs and electrical outlets were, so we rented Fast Times at Ridgemont High and paused the movie during the kitchen scenes, and we could then look and see where all the outlets were when the house was originally built.
See? Amazing stories about fascinating people.
I don't know that either of those are amazing or fascinating.
I think
it
is.
Fun nonetheless.
Well, and I'm glad we started this little wormhole because Jake does a lot of announcing for IndyCar, so he travels a lot.
Correct.
And when he does, I'm aware of a few little ones. I know, like when you go to Milwaukee,
can I jump in here? You tell the Houston Astrodome story?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, there's that one. That's a great one.
Look, if you actually IndyCar
you broke the law, Jake.
No, it was not, I did not. Well, yeah, I kind of did. So
he got away with it, though.
I did. This is
it's that smooth talking is what that, that's what did
the
it.
The Houston Energy Stadium or whatever the hell it's
NRG
called now.
NRG or whatever.
Reliant.
It's right next to the Astrodome.
Texans.
It's all in the same
NRG
area.
Yeah.
And the Astrodome is right now it's still there?
Still standing.
They can't tear it down because of the asbestos or something? Is that the deal?
Well, that's the problem, too, because I didn't find that out until after I went in. So I'll be seeing pulmonary specialists soon.
It's chock full of mesothelioma. But, yeah.
So the Astrodome just sits vacant. And a matter of fact, I had called ahead of time to say, hey, can we do tours of the Astrodome? And they said, it's not only closed, it's like condemned. You can't get anywhere near it. So it's literally right next door, and it is dwarfed by NRG Stadium.
Wait, they're still answering the phone at the Astrodome?
I called like hello?
Exactly.
Nobody told the guy.
Hello, Astrodome, can I help you? No events again this week. Sorry. Okay, thanks for calling.
Evel Knievel is not here this week.
Oh, God, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and wasn't Billie Jean King and... Was that Bobby Riggs? Was that in the Astrodome?
That was the Astrodome.
Yeah.
UCLA Houston was in the Astrodome.
I was just going to say UCLA Houston.
Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears. Go.
I just Googled how much asbestos is bad, and they say no amount of asbestos is safe. So that's not good.
Well, so I found through a little birdie that there was a door that had been left open of the Astrodome, and I went through the door, and it was part of the old delivery docks, and... So I squeezed my way through there, and then I had to actually crawl through like an air duct. It was probably 20 feet long. So I was spelunking, basically.
Oh, my God.
And that took me to the walkway ramps that like fans would have walked,
right.
And that eventually got me out into the Astrodome. So I was out on the field,
right, like at midfield of the football.
Correct, like out totally by myself
and just looking around.
So I went into the Oilers locker room. I went to the Astros locker room. The most fascinating part was the offices. I mean, it literally looked like they came in one day and just said, "Everybody out right now." There were still Rolodexes. There were still computers. I mean, everything was just
no
sitting
way.
There. Oh yeah,
it was like a
Coke machines. The whole deal.
It was like a nuclear explosion, that's and everybody exactly, was gone.
It was like the zombie apocalypse.
Zombie, right?
So I went back the second day. We were there for 3 days. I went back the second day and I took an X-Acto knife and started taking AstroTurf because I figured it's the original, right? So
how cushy or how soft or how hard was the feel?
It was impossible to cut. It took forever. I was like, at first, I was like, I'm going to get like the. There was a part of the AstroTurf that says Astrodome, and I was like, I'm cutting that whole bad boy out. That's going to be like my backyard. Well, I mean, it would have weighed 1,000 pounds, but
when you were standing on the field, could you imagine being tackled on it? Was it like
would
hard?
Have been horrendous?
Oh my
god! Yeah, I mean, you're talking a quarter inch padding over concrete.
Right. That's all it was. Right.
Basically, the early days of the RCA Dome was that way.
Like
right?
a thick, exactly. Like yeah. a thick carpet, and then concrete.
It would have been
thick.
Horrible.
Yeah.
So I end up, I mean, at this point I had taken orders because there were like six people that were like, if you go in, bring me back AstroTurf. I had a backpack full of AstroTurf, and then literally on each shoulder I had probably 8 inches of AstroTurf. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm not going to be able to spelunk back out of here.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm just going to have to walk out one of the exits, which are locked from the outside but not from the inside.
Okay.
I walked out, and there was a Texas State Trooper 10-gallon hat, the whole deal.
Please tell me he called you boy.
Covered in dirt. Son, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
I'm covered in dirt and dust, and I'm walking past, and I'm like, just act like I don't see him.
That's right.
And naturally, he says, excuse me. And I said, yeah.
Son.
He said,
son.
Yes,
boy.
Excuse me, son. You want to explain where you've been? And I said, I was inside the Astrodome. And he said, you want to explain to me why you felt it was necessary to go inside a building that's closed from all the way around?
Oh, man.
And I said, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I was born in 1972. It's the most iconic sports venue of my childhood. The Bad News Bears, Evel Knievel, the Astros games, the rainbow uniforms, the whole deal.
UCLA Houston.
Yeah. And I was like, and I figured because it's so iconic, I had to have part of it, and a lot of my friends would enjoy the same thing. And I kid you not, this cop looked right at me and goes, fuck it, that's pretty cool. And I walked off, and that was it. I went back to my hotel room and was cutting up pieces like a dealer.
I can't imagine.
Like a dealer.
Like a dealer, cutting it up.
I can cut you a strip, get you an eighth.
So that's a fun, polite, you know, and that's the thing with Jake. Jake goes about these things. He doesn't have any ill intent.
No.
You know.
You just got to take advantage of where you are, right?
Now, you said things. The Astrodome story is the only one I know.
Yeah, but, well, and he's not necessarily grabbing things. He's getting a lot of information from people. Like, I'm thinking Milwaukee was sort of an odd one, right? You kind of did a tour of some places.
I went to Milwaukee to the Pabst Brewery. There's a place called the I think it's called the Best Room.
Love me some PBR. Continue.
Okay, the Pabst Brewery. Vibber, you go to Milwaukee. You go to the Pabst Brewery. It's been closed forever.
Milwaukee? Is that what we pronounce it?
That's correct,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Alice Cooper can do a whole history of city. So I go to the Pabst Brewery, and somebody bought the Pabst Brewery and turned the old chairman office into a bar. They serve Schlitz, Blatz, and Pabst on tap. That's it.
Wow.
And you can sit at the old original boardroom and drink a Pabst. So I go in there. I found the place completely serendipitously, sat down, had a Pabst, got to know the guy that runs it. Best Place is what it's called. The next year I go back, and he said, oh, man, now we're renting out for weddings and stuff, so I apologize. We're not open for business, but I'll just get you like – I'll just roll a keg into Captain Pabst's office, and you can just drink the Pabst yourself. Just draw yourself a Pabst. Sure. So I sat at his desk and poured myself a Pabst and sat there. Well, then he says, so he comes back in to check on me, make sure I'm still alive, I guess. And I said, you know, I'm fascinated by Milwaukee. Like, what else is around here? And he said, oh, man, I got a buddy who was dating the prosecutor for Jeffrey Dahmer. And he goes, yeah, he's got all kinds of great stories and photos and stuff. Anyway, he tends bar down it. And before he could tell me the name of the bar, you know, okay, well, we'll see you.
Yeah.
So I go to this guy, and I walk into the bar, and the guy, I said, yeah, it's Andy or whatever his name was. Yeah, it's me. And I said, he goes, what can I get you? I said, I'll take a Pabst Blue Ribbon and your best Jeffrey Dahmer stories. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh.
And I go, no, dude, it's cool. They told me, like, you know, I give him like the secret handshake.
Right.
And he's like, oh, man, you won't believe it. And he told me, like, stories that his girlfriend had told him about Dahmer. And then he said, well, you know, Dahmer met all of his victims at La Cage. And I said, well, what is La Cage? And he said, oh, it's the tranny club downtown. That's where Dahmer would go in and meet all his victims. And I said, I'll go ahead and take my bill. And then I went with Nick Yeoman, who I work with in IndyCar Radio. We went to La Cage and walked in. And it was – actually, we were there for the finals of Mr. and Mrs. Wisconsin night.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. And we watched it and sat and took in the whole experience.
Oh, and took a tranny home.
Did not take
a tranny. No, he didn't take a tranny home.
Like, you had one on each shoulder, right? As you
that's right.
Okay, maybe.
Not to go too far back in the story, but did you say you sat in Captain Pabst's office?
Yes.
His name is Captain Pabst?
Well, Pabst, he – Pabst,
they Blue call Ribbon. Him that.
It'd be like Vibbert Blue Ribbon. I think Pabst is his last name, right?
Correct.
But yeah.
Captain.
He's a captain. How's he a captain?
Well, I don't know if he was a captain like L. Ron Hubbard, but I think he's a captain I think he was a
Vibbert.
I see him in a hat, right?
When you are the founder and namesake of a beer empire, they call you whatever it is you want to be called.
You can call yourself a captain.
We don't call Chick Captain Chick. We could.
Well, I could if I start wearing captain hats instead of baseball caps. Maybe not.
Can we call me Captain Jeff since it's your podcast?
Do you want to be called Captain Jeff?
Not really, actually.
I think Chick would be, he'd be Chief.
Chief.
Right?
Chief
he's Chick. A Redskin, so he'd be Chief.
My dad used to call everyone Chief back in the day.
Speaking of that, I have the same Indianapolis Chiefs correct. Shirt that you have? I have the same exact, I love Indian stuff. And if it has an Indian on it, I try to get it. And I noticed I went to that store.
The shop in Broderpool.
The shop in Broderpool. 920
Broderpool Avenue.
It's a great little place to go.
It is.
The shop?
The shop.
The
is,
shop.
Is that Broderpool. Where you got your Christmas Addicts shirt?
No, I got that from 1909, okay. Which is a similar outfit.
A lot of numbers being thrown around here.
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Addicts shirt. How'd you know about my Addicts shirt?
I've seen you wear it. I love that shirt. Yeah. It's amazing. I remember actually when I went to go see Bobby Knight talk, he was talking about how there was a team in Ohio, and he's like, this has to be the best team ever. And then someone was like, oh, they're not even the best team in the region or whatever, because Oscar Robertson was...
Yeah, the Addicts team yeah. was
those guys.
Yeah.
You had a great conversation with a guy who you guys meet when you go to Keystone Sports Review, is that right? Who had some connection with Crispus Addicts, is that right?
They'll be there September 7th, by the way.
That's right, yeah. They still have the sign out front for Keystone Sports Review September 7th.
September 7th. At least once a year, that sign is right.
So. We had Oscar on the show. Yeah. We had Oscar Robertson on, a week ago or so, right before Addicts won.
He was on the Bob and Tom show. He seemed like a real nice guy, but I mean, obviously, somebody who's famous like that has to, you know, be a little guarded. But
I think he's very guarded.
Yeah,
I think Oscar Robertson Chick is a fascinating story because for the first 20 years of his life, he was a celebrity that lived. You know, I mean, he was a basketball prodigy, but I think because of the fact that he lived in a segregated world, he didn't grasp that. People saw him as a prodigy, but they assumed that he stay kind of within his own boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he got out of the snow globe and realized that segregation existed, it created in him a resentment, rightfully so, over the way he'd been treated. And I think it took him a lot longer to release that than it did a lot of his teammates and the other guys that he grew up with. As a matter of fact, some guys from Addicts have told me that, I'm not going to say intervention, but there were a group of guys that played with him that basically said to him recently, like, look, man, this anger that you have is not doing anybody any good, and it's not right. doing you any good. Right. And I think he started to kind of come out of that. But it's an understood, in my opinion, justifiable resentment, for sure, the way he was treated.
How do you feel about Russell Westbrook and this triple-double thing? I mean, Oscar at least won a championship, I mean, albeit with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the Milwaukee Bucks correct. And all this stuff. But I mean,
well, it's. I'll say this.
I get it. Statistically, it's an amazing feat. But I mean, championships. I don't think Russell's going to win one anytime soon, right?
Russell Westbrook's a phenomenal player.
Sure,
don't get me wrong. The interesting thing is, in today's world, it usually takes two to tango. So you usually have to have a duo. You look at any great player in history, Oscar Robertson, prime example. It wasn't until he, you know, all of a sudden is playing without Cinder. Now they win a title, right?
Right.
And Russell Westbrook now without Durant doesn't necessarily have that. The one thing statistically, and Oscar Robertson said when we had him on, he's like, hey, I hope he breaks the record because he's a wonderful talent and a wonderful player. And mm-hmm. But to me, and I hate to say this, but Oscar Robertson's triple-doubles I think are more impressive. because it was a different style of play. It was more of a half-court game, and you didn't have – not only did you not have the open style of play, but you had more defined position roles. So for a point guard to average double digits in rebounds was
amazing.
Unheard of because it wasn't happening in the transition in which Russell Westbrook's doing.
Right. Well, my thing is he was pre-shot clock, right?
Correct.
So there nowadays there's a minimum number of possessions that's going to happen.
Great point.
And back then they didn't even come close to that number of possessions.
That's a great point. I simply say this about Oscar Robertson. Admittedly, I didn't see him play, but from everything I've read, talked to, everything else, I think it's safe to say that Oscar Robertson was as athletically ahead of the game in 1964 as Michael Jordan was in 1994 or LeBron James is in 2014. That's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah.
He was the precursor to those guys. I mean, he was a phenomenal player. There's no doubt about it.
What? How big of a problem do you think the NBA has with the star players taking nights off and Barkley calling for the boycott and it being incredibly apparent that the players don't care about the regular season and on and on and on?
I think the problem is this. The problem is the NBA essentially has a caste system. You're either a team with an elite star or you're having to get fans to come to see your team play when they're playing those elite stars.
Right.
So, like, I remember as a kid in the early 80s growing up in Indiana, you know, the Pacers were terrible. And the Pacers' marketing campaign was, come see Dr. J, Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in a three-game package. Well, if you are the lower-tier teams, you know, you're New Orleans or you're Charlotte. And, I mean, everybody now, I realize, has probably a star player. But if you are marketing for people to come at your city to see LeBron James or whatever else, you have an obligation then, theoretically, to let those people know that whoever it was that they were billed as seeing are going to be on the floor. I personally don't have a problem with guys taking a night off.
I don't either. But I also understand, you know, if I'm going to a basketball game and I take my young son, Jeff Fibbard, who has gotten an A in math, and I said, if you do that, we're going to go watch LeBron James play the Pacers. And then I take him to see, and LeBron's not playing, Jeff.
Well, I'm fine with that because we're going to go get ice cream, too.
I will get him ice cream, and I'll get him a Pacers shirt to make up for it. But still, I mean, I don't understand that part either. I don't know what it's supposed to be.
Should they sacrifice the game check? I mean, their game checks are typically, these kind of numbers.
Well, you know what?
They're twice an annual income.
I don't get people being like, well, I paid money for my kid to see. Like,
okay.
That's the society we live in today where it's like, well, my son deserves it. No, your son doesn't deserve to see it. There's going to be some shitty stuff that happens to your son, all right?
He's
not going to get the world handed to him every time.
Well, maybe he's had shitty stuff, and this is the thing that's going to pull him out of it. Well, and it's worth working hard in school.
Okay, but what about this? So take someone who is a fan of the Bob and Tom Show, okay? Chick McGee is an integral part of the Bob and Tom Show, right?
Oh, my God. You've said a mouthful there.
Now, so when Chick is one of the engines that drives that show.
Mentally or physically unable to perform, yes, go on.
So if you are on vacation and a listener tunes in and Chick is not there, does Chick need to sacrifice part of his check because people who are listening to the Bob and Tom Show expect that he should be there?
Absolutely.
That's my point.
So therefore, no, I don't think players should either. It's the same thing. It's their job. And everybody gets days off,
just
right?
Let us know what their vacation package is, and we can accept that.
Here's what I think.
For their job, and to your point, yes.
So ESPN knows what they've done is a bad deal. They paid too much, billion and something, for the 82-game package. The players don't want an 82-game season.
Correct.
I don't at all. But the players don't want any less money for the contracts they've signed. So if they go from an 82-game season to a 60-game season, if you prorate that, they're not going to take a 22-game pay cut on their contract.
Yeah.
That's what they want, and ESPN wants some of their money back.
But, ESPN, Chick, this is kind of ESPN's MO, and I don't mean this as a
– It really is.
Like, they go all in on these contracts, and then, like, 5 years later realize – I mean, the NHL contract they signed.
Right.
And they gave the NHL a ridiculous sum of money, and then – all of a sudden you hear, well, ESPN wants out of the contract because they overpaid. Well, whose fault is that?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a deal, right?
To an extent, Major League Baseball as well. I think sports in general, sports have just become a la carte. I mean, with the different networks, you have the MLB network, you have the NBA network, everything else. Somewhat each respective sport is becoming oversaturated. And I think it's hurting the live viewership because it used to be that you would say, oh, you know, Thursday night, there's going to be a game tonight. I can't wait to watch it. Well, now the games are everywhere. You can watch them anytime you want, and you can individually select which team or which league you want to watch.
Yep.
And people like ESPN have paid this huge sum of money, and the wind of change has started to eradicate the return on investment.
And unless you're talking about the NFL, and that should be doubled. There should be a 32-game season, I think that should be. And it should start 64. In July.
As long as none of those games are on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another great – what are they going to do about Thursday night football? Yeah. Everybody agrees the games are less because everybody's just played and they're tired. And
Amazon just spent $50 million to stream Thursday night football.
That seems to me – I don't understand that.
They need to put better matchups on it. I felt like when the NFL Network first started doing Thursday night football – there was a contractual agreement that every team would appear at least once on the NFL Network.
I think
so. Thursday Night Football
still
became their participation trophy.
Right.
Well, the Buffalo Bills and Cleveland Browns. No one wants to see it on Sunday night or Monday Night Football, so we're going to put them on Thursday night.
Thursday Night Football.
And so, you know, and then the matchups are just terrible. There's how often is there like a really good, like, whoa, this is a major significance.
Hardly,
you know,
ever.
Yeah, and I feel like Monday Night Football is kind of the same way. I feel like there's not the same matchups on Monday Night Football.
No doubt. Sunday Night Football has become the marquee game.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know how big Monday Night Football was.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it used to be.
There's a lot of C-minus matchups on Monday.
Yeah. There was a great Monday Night game at the Astrodome. Earl Campbell and
against the Miami Dolphins.
It went crazy.
What you're seeing tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Unbelievable.
A truly outstanding football player.
Was that Campbell's rookie year?
Yeah, that was 70.
I think it might have been, right?
That was 78.
Man.
Against
the And then the I'm sure you all remember the Redskins Cowboys game when Kenny Houston kept Walt Garrison out of the end zone and the Redskins. Oh, is it just me?
Okay. I remember the Redskins Giants game on Monday Night Football.
Oh, when one of the New York teams was in the World Series or something like that.
I just remember wasn't Joe Theismann's leg on Monday Night Football?
Okay, all right. This seems about as good a place as any to take a break, I would think. Yes, I don't know if I told you this or not. I finally got up to because Joe. Honest to gosh, Joe will text me now out of the clear blue sky.
Oh, I know you guys are and close. Yeah,
it's still the weirdest thing. But I finally got the balls to ask him and go, what was that like? And he goes, it was the most painful thing I've ever been.
Sure.
or will go through in my life.
And it's not a subject of which to be flippant, but you can tell with Lawrence Taylor's reaction.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I mean, Lawrence Taylor, both hands on the side of the helmet, and he's thinking, oh, my. And he's hurrying them out there to get to him.
Joe said it was the pain and the sound that it made. He said it was like a gunshot. And he said, I hadn't – the New York Times called him, and I want to say 07 or 08 and do a big story on it. And they asked me if I'd watched the play, and he said, I have not watched it since it happened.
Yeah, why would you?
And they go, will you watch? And that was the first time he'd ever seen it. And he goes, it was worse than I remember.
Now, okay, this is such a dumb question. I'm 90% certain of the answer, but he did not play again after that, correct?
No. He more or less retired that night.
Right.
And the fabulous Jay Schrader, the NFL MVP, if you're picking assholes, we won that game. We beat the Giants that night. I don't know. No one remembers that. I forget the score. I'll look it up.
It's funny. I know. I see Jake most days, and a lot of times I'll go in and visit before his show starts at 3. And a lot of times he's watching old YouTube videos games from 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, I love
I know what he's watching today.
This week football, I like those highlight shows where Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire are doing the highlight. God, from 1972.
It's Bobby Douglas
from the Chicago Bears.
I'll pull up either an Alcoa Presents Fantastic Finishes or You Make the Call.
Charlie Jones and some sort of NFL thing like 4:30? I watched it 4:30 in Ohio. 4:30 in the afternoon. It was brought to you by Frito-Lay, and it would be highlights from two or three NFL games.
Well, I mean, do you remember how big a deal that was then, though? Because
you didn't see the highlight.
I mean,
Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football at halftime.
Howard Cosell in the halftime
highlight. Oh, wow. So that's what happened in the
Metropolitan Stadium, Minneapolis. Yeah. No, it wasn't Minneapolis, Minnesota. Where was Metropolitan Stadium? Like, Northridge.
Sounds like a New York thing. But.
Maybe it was Minneapolis. I don't know. But yeah, you watched Monday Night Football for the game and then the highlights because yep. they weren't available. You had no idea.
I also loved This Week in Baseball on the weekends.
Oh, yeah.
We were just talking about this this week. Twib.
Yesterday. Yeah.
Mel Allen. That's why I can baseball.
That's whatever. I remember Alcoa.
Alcoa, yeah. Fantastic.
So they did that in football, too? So they did it in
Let's check out this week's Twib notes from around the American League.
Fantastic finishes. Are we taking a break?
Yeah, go for it. Okay. Do your little thing.
Hey, the Chick McGee Show this week brought to you by a new sponsor. We're very excited, at least, we're all excited, but especially Jeff and I. It's BarkBox, Jeff.
Oh, it's Jason. Glad we're on the same page.
I found a video, cute dogs barking.
I'll watch
Bark
that later.
BarkBox is committed to making puppy dogs happy. They work with local and independent businesses. In fact, they only work with vendors who care about the health and happiness of dogs. BarkBox loves dogs. For humans, BarkBox is a delivery of 4 to 6 natural treats and super fun toys based around a surprise theme each month. For dogs, BarkBox is like the joy of a million belly scratches. Well, I'll tell you, this reporter likes a belly scratch every now and then. And here's how BarkBox works. You choose your dog size. It goes from small and cute, 0 to 20 pounds, just right to 20 to 50 pounds, or big and bold to 50-plus pounds. Now, Mrs. Monkey, my golden retriever, mm-hmm. I think he weighs about 50 pounds, right around 70 pounds. And the Ruby is probably 20 to 50 pounds. Then you choose your plan, 1 month, 6 month, or 12-month plans. You can cancel any time, of course. I don't know why you would. Free shipping. And BarkBoxes are shipped on the 15th of each month. So it's kind of like a really cool surprise.
Christmas once a month.
We're
getting in on this.
We're going to get in on this? Okay. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit... Here it is, getbarkbox.com/codewordchick. That's getbarkbox.com/CHICK when you subscribe, and you get a free month. It's also, of course, shipped to your door, unique variety of toys and treats you will not find anywhere else. And each monthly box is themed a county fair, a bark ball, Pooh York City, Brooklyn Hipster. It's all there. Free shipping within the continental United States. Your dog will fall in love with BarkBox. You can easily find it again on BarkBox. BarkShop.com. Are you there?
Look at that. I'm on BarkBox. There's a pretzel that looks exactly like a pretzel, but it's a toy. Nora's getting 6 of those.
Very cool. Go to BarkBox. Go to getbarkbox.com/chick when you subscribe and get a free month. That's barkbox.com. Getbarkbox.com. Did I make that clear? Getbarkbox.com/chick. Do that chick thing. It'll be great.
Mrs. Monkey, would you like a BarkBox?
I would love a BarkBox. I hope my daddy gets me a BarkBox. That would be really great. Wait a minute. What's a BarkBox? What was I doing? I forgot. Okay, I'm going to go outside. Hi, I don't know you, but I love you. Hi. All right, we'll be back with Jake Query and more sports on Podcast One on The Chick McGee Show.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week. Which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it.
Any more than you, fellas. Cool Hand Luke, Strother Martin. Is that Jake's favorite movie?
There's a combo here. This is my favorite Guns N' Roses song, but Jake is a massive Guns N' Roses fan.
Greatest band ever assembled.
I have heard this. How many Guns N' Roses shows have you been to, Jake?
Not as many as you'd think.
But they just toured, what, last year? Or was it a half ago?
They took 25 years off, basically.
Yeah.
I went last year. I saw them during the Use Your Illusion tour. And then I saw them last year in Vegas, Toronto, Chicago, Cincinnati. I'm going this year to, I think, Buffalo.
Okay.
They're outstanding.
Is it...
I realize the Beatles are the greatest band ever seen.
No, is it... Is it as big of an ordeal as we all hear it is before they take the stage? I mean, what's his name? Bill Bailey.
Axl Rose.
Axl Rose, yeah. He won't go out until his aura is right or something.
Here's what's interesting, Chick. That was always their M.O., right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You had riots in St. Louis and,
right.
You know, canceling shows. So when they announced that they were reassembling last year, I'm like, okay, I made a pact that if they ever got together again, I was going to see them. So mm-hmm. I figured, well, I better see him the first night because there might not be a second.
Good
right?
call, yeah.
So I went and bought tickets, went to Vegas, saw them at the T-Mobile Center, and they started at like 12:30. And, I mean, it was like a guy in the crowd, it was great, goes, can they open a Starbucks and somebody let this guy know we're not 25 anymore? But so then after that
– there was a delay.
There was a delay. But then after that, I saw them – and not only were they totally on point, but they started promptly at 10 o'clock every night. I mean, they were never delayed. And word got out. You could tell that people, just through word of mouth, it was like, hey, they actually are doing this legitimately. And by the end of the tour, the ticket prices and everything else were way higher than they were in the beginning because people were clearly hesitant.
And yeah. they were playing, what, almost 2.5, 3 hours?
Yeah, they played 3 hours.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the nicest guys we've ever had on the Bob and Tom Show is Slash. I mean, he is a gentleman and soft-spoken and intelligent and, you know, totally entirely present when he's on the show.
He's been on a couple times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's been on a couple times. And just a great guy, yeah.
We had the bass player, too, and I lost his name.
Oh, yeah, Morty Stevenson. Yeah, no, something else.
Duff, yeah. Talk about a smart dude.
Duff McKagan.
That dude's really bright.
He's the business guy.
He's kind of the business guy.
Well, yeah. You think he cuts checks for everybody at the end of the show?
That's it. They have to go see him. And then
line up.
Axel, here you go.
Here you go. I deducted a little bit. Okay. You know, I think you'll find out. Welcome back to the Chick McGee Show on Podcast One. I'm Chick. That's Jason. That's
JeffVibbert.com.
Jeff Vibber from JeffVibbert.com.
By the way, on the last podcast, we couldn't think of my alter ego, Logan Timmons.
Logan yes. Timmons. Yes. You have LoganTimmons.com parked, is that right?
I need to.
Okay.
Before this podcast gets up.
Our guest today is Jake Query from Query & Schultz on Fox Sports 97.5. If you're lucky enough to live in Indianapolis, you can listen to that on your radio.
iHeartRadio.
If you live anywhere, you live in Australia, you can listen to it on your iHeartRadio. Figure out what time 3 o'clock Eastern time is in America. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/chick. That's audibletrial.com/chick, C-H-I-C-K. You know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android. You're an Android. Or your MP3 player. For you, the listeners of the Chick McGee Show podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download. You know what that means, Jeff.
It's free.
If you go to audibletrial.com/chick, you get a free download. You could download Girl on the Train if you want.
I love that book.
If you got 6 months to read a book, you can download The Hobbit.
Hate that book.
Bridgeford. You can download one of my favorite books recently, The Murder of Sonny Liston. That's on there. Boys Will Be Boys. Have you read that?
No.
It's about the Cowboys.
I don't read books. I only listen to them.
Michael Irvin.
Same.
Well, that's what I mean. Audible. It's all at audible.com. And just because you listen to the Chick McGee Show, that .com address again is audibletrial.com/chick. For a free download, please do that and put Chick down there 2 or 3 times so we can keep the Chick
McGee podcast
going.
Someday, maybe your book will be on there, Chick.
That's exactly
what you're writing. What chapter are you on?
Three.
Three?
So I'm not writing them in order. I'm just writing chapters, and then we're going to worry about it. But
sure.
If things keep going the way they were, I'm looking at a 2022 release date, something like that.
All right.
Okay, so fingers crossed. Back with Jake Query and fascinating stories about amazing people.
Do you know what year? Because remember the joke was when Guns N' Roses finally released Chinese Democracy, that China would actually have a democracy by the time it came out. That was the joke.
There's a really good song on that.
There's a couple good songs on there. It's actually a decent album.
It's basically Axl Rose and like four dudes he met at 7-Eleven.
Right. One of them named Buckethead or something. I don't know.
Buckethead's a badass.
Do you know what? You might know the interest. How long ago did that album come out, Chick?
Is it 4 years? 3 or 4 years? It's not that long ago, right?
I was going to say.
Listening to it on a plane with a comedy tour by myself. So that was 2 or 3 years ago.
2012?
November of 08.
No effing way. Really?
It's closing in on 9 years, little 8.5 years.
Yeah, wow. I guess that's right. Because they toured with it.
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would have been 11 or 12 when they did the tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a bad album.
It's, but not. It's not. There's some good songs on there.
Oh, the name of the song I like, I think, is Chinese Democracy. Would that be right? Mm. Here, wait a minute. I think we can.
Catcher in the Rye is a good song.
Oh, gosh. Don't touch it.
Is it going to play?
Don't touch.
Also, a good audiobook.
Is that it? Kind of scary here at first.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Are you scared?
Yeah.
It's all right. We'll get you.
Turn down.
What do you want after you're scared, buddy?
Jelly beans.
Jelly beans. Get them jelly beans. I wrote this. the good part starts. It'll be nothing but the finest and audio connections here on the Chick McGee Show.
Still scared.
What the hell is this? The album version? Do you remember this, Jake? Have you ever heard this part?
Yes. It's a little longer than I remember.
It's what I thought, right? Oh, here we go.
Still going.
I remember it being a little more melodic than this. There you go. Yeah.
I am Iron Man. So did they play any of these songs last year? Really?
They played like three of them.
No kidding.
That's cool. Yeah. Huh, interesting. So it's basically, hey, Slash, can
they
you...
said that at one point Slash played one, and the kind of the reaction was, this was the subtle sign that the makeup was, 100% back.
Sure.
The fact that Slash agreed to play to a song that was off Chinese Democracy.
Sure. Huh. That's fascinating.
And they're going out again? Is that what you said?
They are going this year, yeah.
Do you have tickets already? Or do you know where they're
going to be? Buffalo's the... With my schedule and everything else, I think I'm going to go to Buffalo.
I see. He's on the road a lot.
I just say, since you just mentioned I'm on the road a lot, I just got notification here that my flight for tonight is delayed until...
Already?
Yep. I'm delayed until 11:15 p.m. tonight. I will not make my connection into Los Angeles.
Where are you flying to?
Los Angeles.
But before that?
I'm going to Los Angeles via Las Vegas, and my flight to Las Vegas is delayed by 3 hours and 30 minutes.
So you're going to miss your connection to Los Angeles.
So I'm going to miss my connection.
But it's only a four-hour drive from Vegas to L.A.
But there's planes just landing and taking off L.A. all the time, right?
But I can tell by your face you're a little irked.
I got to start making alternative plans, it appears.
At least you're not flying into LaGuardia.
Oh, God. This is the funniest thing. almost the funniest thing I've ever been through. Jeff Vibbert. You want to tell that story? He, quite spur of the moment, went to New York City this past weekend, was called on a Saturday morning at 9:30, and you're in New York City how much longer than that?
5 p.m.
5 p.m., you're in New York City, then you're partying.
Oh, partying hard.
And then you're back the next night at like 8 p.m. Sunday night, right?
I got back to Indy at 5 p.m., and then I got in a car and I drove to Cincinnati. Got two beers at the bar because I'm a bro. I party. And then I went to my room, passed out, woke up, did the broadcast, drove home.
What did you do Saturday night in New York City? Everything?
Everything. Just partied.
What was
literally
wrong?
Just partied.
What was wrong with LaGuardia? Didn't they just rebuild that? Or?
It's under construction. Oh, don't get me started.
It's under construction. Okay.
Yeah, it's just... and apparently you can't get to... You have to get on a bus to go from terminal like D and C to terminal A and B.
Oh, goodness.
And I went in with... The two guys I went with, and I was eating pizza with them, and I was like, I'll just walk over there. Everything's connected. Nope. Had to get on a bus. Almost missed my flight.
Oh, God.
My first class flight. And you know what I hate about first class? They sit you down in your seat,
right?
And they parade the poor people past you.
Yeah,
when
that's
they go
the worst.
It's
horrible. I've noticed
Let you
that.
See the commoners, right?
Yes, that's I don't right. like it. And they try to look at you and touch you. Ugh.
No good.
Ugh.
Well, of all the people I know... I would put Jake pretty much at the top of the list of people who are, based on their personality, are where they're most effective and useful with your personality and your knowledge. Being on the radio all the time, you have such amazing Chick the same way. I guess you two are probably the 1A, 1B.
What's just, happening? What
just,
am I?
Just again? The brain power to remember whether it be a jersey number, an actor in an obscure film, and a line they did.
Oh, this will be great. Let's do jersey numbers. Go ahead.
Nano, no, here's what I was going to do. Oh, okay. This is episode number 73.
73? That's a tough one.
I know.
That is a tough one. It's got to be a lineman, right?
John Hanna? Was John Hanna 73?
Ooh, don't even know who John Hanna is.
New England Patriots.
New England Patriots, yeah. Hall of Famer.
78? I think he was 78.
Nope, 73. Oh, no, you're a Patriots guy, yeah. I don't. 73.
You could be right.
See, I thought 73 might be a tough
one. 72.
See, 73, I think more like in sports years. Like when I hear 73, I immediately think to myself, like, okay, 73, Final Four, St. Louis, Checkerdome, UCLA won, beat Indiana in the semifinal, Bill Walton fouled out Steve Downing. And then I think 73, rain delayed Indy 500, Gordon Johncock won.
Sure. Right.
So I go more than that. I think the A's won the World Series, but don't quote me on that, in 73.
That might have been the Charlie Finley stuff, yeah.
But a jersey number 73. Man, that's a...
I thought that might be a tough one.
72, of course. John Hanna, number 73.
He was,
look
yeah.
at Chick.
You're good.
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Is he listed as the best ever number 73?
He would have to be, right?
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, so...
That could have been 78, but yeah, I get my threes and my eights and my sixes and my... I get eights confused with lots of stuff.
I watched a documentary, Best Patriots of All Time, and they showed him on it, and they showed his, like, film. Amazing.
Tell me everything.
It was... Okay.
No.
It was amazing to see him.
John, no, yeah. He really... You hear
Paul Revere on there?
He was a great Samuel offensive Adams. Lineman, but you forget how great he was. Yeah.
Patriot and a Brewer.
But, Jake, do you sort of agree with that you're where you're supposed to be?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that's probably fair. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how you guys are. With me personally, I have no idea what else I would do.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said, if I lose the job in the morning, I can't work. I don't have any skills.
I'm the exact same way.
I don't have a business. I didn't go to college. I have amazing facts about interesting people. I don't have anything.
I think the two of you have like one of the best skills, and that's talking and conversing with people.
Sometimes my mind double clutches.
I think what he's saying is we can BS well.
Right? I can lie like a rug.
That's right.
Yeah.
72 is Dexter Manley, of course.
Okay.
We all know that. 71 is Charles Mann. 74 is George Stark. 75
mean Joe Green?
75 mean Joe Green. 70.
I think he's going through Redskins.
I know.
No. Yes, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing.
And here's the thing. I can tell you, since it is a podcast, people can't see it, Chick does know this off the top of his head, and like Dexter Manley, he's not reading this off a list.
That's exactly right. Dexter couldn't read until recently. And he has one of the it must be because I'm a Redskins fan. He had a great football life because he just recently learned to read and on and on.
Tell me everything about
it. That's exactly right.
Did I hear that Patrick Ewing couldn't read when he left Georgetown? Is that true or is that a rumor?
I think that's a Pacers fan talking.
Yeah, no, I think
I'm not saying me. I mean, I didn't make it up, but.
We'd have to ask Schultz, right? Because
he'll defend him to no end.
His all time favorite player.
Yeah, he's a Knicks fan like we're Pacer fans, I guess. You're a Pacer fan, right?
I am. Jake? Yeah. I mean, growing up, you know, like I said.
Do you remember the telethon where they saved the team and all that stuff? No, you were. Wait, well. No, you were born in 72, so maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I don't remember it. I obviously. It's kind of one of those things, Chick, that there are some memories that you have that you can't distinguish whether you actually remember it or you've been told it so many times you have the vision in your head. And it's like, but. So, I'm obviously well aware of that. Was what, 76, I think? So. But, you know, when I was a kid, especially when I was in high school, I mean, I remember vividly, we would all the time just be like, hey, you know, let's go to the Pacer game tonight. And tickets were, we'd buy $9 tickets and move down a third of the way down Market Square Arena and have pretty good seats by the end of the game.
Right.
We sat in a game once, my buddies and I went to a Pacer game against the Detroit Pistons, mid to late 80s. We're on Lambeer the whole game. I mean, we're calling him every name in the book. We're screaming at Lambeer. We're doing everything we can. So then we're doing trivia. And my buddy Scott McConnell's like, all right, where did Bill Lambeer go to college? And I'm like, Notre Dame. And my buddy McConnell's like, no, he went to Michigan. I'm like, he went to Notre Dame. No, he went to Michigan. So there's four of us there. We're going back and forth. Finally, this sweet little old couple that had been sitting in front of us the entire time turns around and the guy says, he went to Notre Dame. We know. He's our son.
Oh! So Bill Lambeer's dad wasn't a jerk, right?
No. They were actually very nice. I think they were used to Bill being the heel.
Yeah. I forgot
that's our boy.
I forgot that Lambeer went to Notre Dame. Yep. That's right. And it was his coach Digger Phelps?
Yeah, probably was, right?
Yeah.
He and Kelly Tripucka. I mean, Notre Dame always had a really good players. They just never really had great teams.
John Shoemate and all those guys.
Remember David Rivers was a good player?
Sure.
They've had a lot of good players there.
Sure.
You know?
Man.
Is Phelps still on game day? Does he still do that?
Oh, the marker thing? I don't think so. Remember the marker that matches ties?
Yeah.
Different colors. Mark.
As a BC boy, I don't care for Notre Dame too much. So.
Hey, you BC, and, though, Notre Dame fans hate BC after, what, 93?
Oh, God, yes. Don't even bring up 93.
He has no idea what you're talking about.
I was a big BC fan that day, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I made the mistake of wearing my Boston College shirt out on St. Patrick's Day, and a bunch of Notre Dame fans obviously were talking shit and hated me. And I was like, anyway, so...
So but you had other jobs, I assume, Jake, before you kind of got in. Because I know you did TV and radio.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to
Were you on camera at 6? I don't remember you being... Were you? I don't remember
It was at 6, though, so no one remembers.
Okay.
You know?
How long ago? It wasn't that long ago.
I was at Channel... Well, here's the thing. So when I was in the 6th grade, I called Channel 6 and told them that I wanted to be a sportscaster. And Ed Sorensen... Did you ever meet Ed Sorensen?
I did. I did, Jake. He was a true, unbelievable professional, and we were at the sports bar.
That's right, buddy.
And
did he put his arm around you?
I think I said hi to him one time because he was working. Well, no, when he did mornings at X for our sister station, they weren't in our building.
Oh,
we had just bought them. Remember that?
How long did he do that? Like a year, right?
I think it was like a year, until he got tired of getting up in the morning.
That was like 90, it had to be like 94-ish.
That's exactly right.
Because they moved to the big building in 95.
Yeah, I bumped into him, I think it was at the sports bar one night, but I just said hi, and he was aware of our show, but he didn't. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I called, and he
was great, though. I thought he was, TV sports
great. I will say this, he was... I told him when I was 12 years old, 13 maybe, that I wanted to be a sportscaster. Didn't know him from Adam.
Right.
And he said, well, have your parents drop you off at the station. You can follow me for a day. And
no
by the
kidding.
Time, yeah, by the time I was a senior in high school, and Scott Hoke was great about this too. By the time I was a senior in high school, I had my own entry card into Channel 6. And when I was bored, I would just go down and sit and read press guides and tear scripts for Ed. And every once in a while, he'd say, hey, get in the car, buddy. We got to go get some Pacer sound. And I'd go down to Market Square with him or whatever. And I remember one time Scott Hoke called me and said, hey, what are you doing right now? And I might have been – this was in college. And I said, nothing. And he said, we need somebody to go to the airport and get Colts sound. The Colts had just won a game, a big game, and Channel 6 hadn't sent anybody. So they sent me to the airport to interview Jim Harbaugh and a bunch of players as they were coming off the plane. I mean, I'm 21 years old. Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
So – I mean, Ed was unbelievable to me in that regard. And so I started out behind the scenes, but at the time I was working at a cigar store in Broadapple. Best job ever.
Oh, Hardwick's?
Yep.
No kidding.
8 years I worked at Hardwick's. And it was like...
Like just evenings or...
No, opened at 10 o'clock. Actually, we were open from 10 until 9, Monday through Friday, 10 until 10 on Saturday.
okay.
10 until 5 on Sunday. And I literally would go in every morning at 10 and work until usually 6.
Okay.
And then I would go into Channel 6 at night and just do whatever Ed needed me to do. And then eventually that kind of parlayed into doing more. But the cigar store was the best. I mean, it was the best. I'd go into Channel 6 at 6 o'clock at night, and it's like, I've already had 3 cigars and 2 energy drinks today. Dynamite was the energy drink back then. We sold it at the cooler. It was the best. It was the best job. It was like every day was a Seinfeld episode. Every day. All the characters in Broadapple. It was great.
So was it – I mean, would you get high-class guys coming to Broadapple for cigars?
I was more plugged in – with the whereabouts of my hometown of Indianapolis in the 8 years that I worked at the cigar store than any other period of my life, because every bigwig in town would come in there and smoke their cigars and hang out. And we also had the world's largest selection of fine adult magazines.
Oh, wow.
Along with it, it was a huge news rack, too, though. I mean, we had... You know, it was like
out of town at the time when the internet. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it wasn't there. Internet.
Right.
Was this at 54th and College?
No,
it's on Broadway.
You're thinking
Apple
of
Avenue.
Northside News.
That's what I was thinking.
It was on 743 Broadway Avenue.
Yeah.
Not right in
the shop at 920 Broadway Avenue.
That's okay.
Right. So no, I would sit in there. I mean, I remember one day a guy came in. This is just the kind of stuff I would deal with. Not deal with. I mean, it was great.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in there by myself. Door opens. A regular comes in, who is kind of like Kramer.
Okay.
And I hear this gunk. And I'm like, what is he doing? He had a large, like, oil drum, Okay. And he's like swiveling it into the store, and I'm like, what are you doing? He says, you know, you just never know what life's going to throw at you. And I said, what do you mean? And he was driving down Kessler. Some guy and his wife got into an argument. The wife was throwing the guy's crap out, which included an oil drum full of pennies.
Oh, my God.
And so she gave it to the guy as he pulled over to see what was going on. And she goes, just take any of his crap you want. And the guy is beyond his, you know, beside himself. He's like, yeah, take it. I don't care. So this guy sat for several days in a row, came in the store every morning because he left the drum in there and rolled pennies. He refused to go to the bank because they take 7%.
Sure.
So he sat and smoked Paul Grammarian cigars and rolled pennies for three straight days.
That's a Kramer episode.
And then eventually.
That is a Seinfeld episode. Yeah.
It was like $400 in pennies.
Oh, wow.
Can Kramer come to the diner? No, he's still rolling pennies. I don't know how much longer he's going
to
do
that. Or he hired some Cubans to come in.
That's right.
And roll the pennies
for him. The Dominicans don't roll as tight. Yeah.
Yes. So did you develop a knowledge about the best cigars, things like
Absolutely.
That? Absolutely. Oh, yeah? So what's the I have never smoked a cigar. I've never even tried to smoke a cigarette. I don't know.
Well, you don't inhale a cigar.
Right, right. You just kind of.
How do you not inhale?
You taste
it.
The smoke, right?
You just don't.
Pop, pop, pop. Remember, you a cigar guy?
In high school, I actually became a cigar guy.
Really?
When I turned 18. 100% serious. Yes.
What cigar?
I would go to. I would smoke. I can't even
Swiss
remember.
Swisher Sweets?
Christoph is what we'd smoke.
Okay.
I can't remember. It's been so long. My uncle actually owns a cigar shop in Blue Ridge, Georgia.
Nice.
So, yeah. And
okay,
he'd send cigars.
Here's what you want to know about cigars, Chick, right. And I've never had Christoph's, actually. Here's what you want to know in 30 seconds or less, okay? Cigars primarily come from any of four, I mean, there are a number of countries, but Honduras, Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, at times you could also get them from Mexico, and then, of course, Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba's known as the best cigars in the world because the climate and the soil there actually make for a thicker leaf, and because of that, and because of the fact that it's the primary export of Cuba, the best cigar manufacturers and rollers all live in Cuba. It is their number one bread and butter.
Hmm.
But everybody thinks that just because something is a Cuban means it's the best cigar. That's not true. The best cigars happen to come from Cuba, but just like anything else, there are also very bad and average cigars that come out of Cuba. You can get cigars from the Dominican, Honduras, Costa Rica that are very, very, very good, but they aren't necessarily made with the 100% accuracy in the roll of what you would get in Cuba. 90% of cigars also have in the interior of it what's called a binder leaf. It's kind of the leaf that everything's rolled around.
Right.
Oftentimes those are from Connecticut, home state of Derek Schultz. And Connecticut also is a very common exterior wrapper leaf. There are two kinds, a natural leaf, which is the lighter kind of cigar, and a Maduro, which is the darker. Maduro actually is made that way by inserting and mixing in a tobacco syrup, which makes it darker, makes it look more intimidating, but the syrup actually gives it a little bit sweeter burn.
What's your favorite cigar?
If I was going to smoke a Cuban cigar, if I could have anything, it would be a Bolivar, which is a brand from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
But a Punch, which is a brand Honduran, a Punch Rothschild or a Hoyo de Monterrey would be my two legal angles here.
So are they – I don't know anything about – I know we're friends with Cuba now or whatever. So are we going to get cigars from Cuba? Are they started coming in?
You are allowed now to bring them in, but they are still not legally sold in the United States. So it used to be that you could only bring in Cuban cigars, Chick, if you came directly from Cuba.
Right.
Now you can bring in like upwards of, I think, 150 cigars if you're coming from Canada or wherever. I got stopped day first of Channel 6, and I got stopped coming back from Windsor when we were doing the IndyCar Detroit race at the border. And Dave had like five cigars on him, and they completely tossed my car. It was unbelievable. And they took the five cigars. We had to sign a waiver. I had two cigars. Dave had five. We had to sign a waiver that we were surrendering our cigars.
Really?
I've always wondered.
And this was recently?
This was like 3 years ago. And okay. So the next time that I came back into the U.S. from Toronto with my passport,
right,
I went through quickly. And then I asked the guy, I'm like, hey, am I flagged? Like, is there something that pops up that says that I was trying to smuggle Cuban cigars? He goes, honestly? So yeah, and he goes, yeah. The guys at the border in Detroit probably had a poker game that night and needed a couple of smokes, so they took yours. Like, okay. Yeah.
Son of a gun.
Can you recall your favorite cigar that you ever smoked? Like the moment, the
and
cigar.
And what you were doing.
What you were doing.
And do you have one set aside for did a you moment? Smoke one when Clemson won the national championship?
I smoked three when Clemson won the national championship.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you have a humidor?
I do.
Nice, nice. Do you have a smoking room?
I don't have a smoking room. I don't have a smoking jacket either.
Oh, I have a smoking jacket.
Do you really?
I do. It was a birthday present.
That's right.
From the Chick McGee and Jess Hooker.
Do you have a smoking room?
That's right.
I don't. I live in an apartment. And I have a daughter, so I don't want to. No, it's Nora Jones, my dog, but I don't want to get the smoke single, in her lungs. Yeah.
He's a single parent. He has to be responsible. He can't be smoking in front of his dog.
Here's the thing. If your dog gets upset with you because of the fact you've opened up the humidor, it all becomes even when you then present to her her bark box.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, there you
Everything's
go.
Good, right? I do have a humidor. My favorite cigar, a Fonseca Triangulares, when I was working at Hardwick's, was my daily go-to. But the first time I had a Bolivar, I was like, okay, this is the real deal.
Real? Okay. It's that good.
So what makes it better? What is the richness of the smoke, the smoothness of it?
The smoothness. Yeah, it doesn't – it's hard to explain. First off, it burns very evenly.
Okay.
So there's no – it's not messy. I hate to say it that way, but the ash breaks off very evenly. But a good cigar oftentimes has almost kind of like a peanut buttery taste in the smoke. I know that sounds weird, but it's a very in a Bolivar. It's a very smooth taste. There's no smoke or ash taste in your mouth at all.
Wow,
that makes zero sense. I realize.
No,
do you have a go to drink while you're smoking?
Diet Coke.
Diet Coke.
Honestly,
not like a brandy or anything.
Is that a thing? Do a lot of people drink Diet Coke?
I think I'm probably the only one. Matter of fact, most people are like, well, a scotch or a bourbon? No.
Right.
I don't know why. Diet Coke to me accentuates the flavor.
No, I know a guy who drinks a Coke every time he has his cigar. So.
Yeah.
Huh.
Love
That's fascinating.
We're on the start of Major League Baseball. We're wrapping up the NBA. The NFL draft is coming up here at the end of the month. What sporting event or game or race or something are you most looking forward to coming up in the rest of 2017? Anything jump into your mind?
I mean, I will admit, just from a weekend of festivity standpoint, the IndyCar race in Long Beach is one of my highlights, but it appears as though now it's going to be more difficult for me to get there than I anticipated. Because that's where I'm going this weekend.
Yeah, because we couldn't. You couldn't do it tomorrow, right? Because you'll be out of town, right? Okay.
Although it appears now, I might have been. Indy 500. I mean, it's huge, no doubt about it. Right. But at the same time, you know, Chick. In all honesty, like last year, I had kind of gotten fatigued with baseball, and I'm not a Cub. My parents are diehard Cubs fans. I'm a Reds fan, so you know, yeah. But last year, kind of wet my whistle for baseball again. So I'm actually kind of excited for the baseball season.
That's cool
to see. You know, the Cleveland Indians, you know, the historic teams are involved. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, we watched the World Series.
I was going to say, I kind of got hooked on the Cubs last year.
Yeah.
I mean, with all those guys, you know, Chris Bryant and Schwarby and you know.
They're hard not to like, right?
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, and Wrigley. I've always said that baseball and hockey, for whatever reason, are the sports that I enjoy in person. The most, I think, you know, and like I watch NFL football, college football all day long on the, but I don't really, a baseball game on TV, a hockey game on TV, I just can't get into it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's so much downtime, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when you're there, you got stuff going on.
Yeah.
I will say this, we are still 2 years, maybe only a year. The Cubs backlash will happen eventually, though. Like right now, they're America's darlings. Everyone loves them. Look, that's how the New England Patriots were when they beat the Rams.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
But you win enough, and people start finding reasons why they hate you.
Yep. Did the Bulls get that? And here's why. I think the answer is no, because Jordan was gone for a couple years, and it kind of restarted, and then they
– That's a very good point. Not to mention, Jordan – did the Bulls themselves know, but I do think that, like, say, Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman did.
Yeah.
And to that matter, even – you know, Tony Kukoc a little bit, but Jordan himself was so beloved.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was so respected and so beloved, and, you know, I don't think it ever happened for Jordan.
Back to the Cubs winning the World Series. Here's a random, I don't know, trivia question, but can you recall a game that big that ended so late? Was it like 1:40 in the morning or something when the final out? Can you recall something that big? Because I had friends, kid has a son in elementary school. He let him stay up. He's like, I don't want my son to miss this.
Yeah, you have to. You had to let him stay up.
I mean, what other big game ended any later than that?
I was the one that comes to my mind, obviously, because it's so recent, was the Patriots Falcons. It wasn't, I mean, it started at 6 and it ended at like.
That was forever, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, still it was overtime.
It still ended before 11, though.
I mean, I think it ended at like 11:30, right?
No.
That's a good question. It would have to be something that happened on the West Coast.
Yeah, you would think, yeah.
You know, the one that comes to mind for me, and it was not that late, but one of the most historic college basketball games was North Carolina State beating Houston in 83, mm-hmm. Phi Slamma Jamma. Yep. And that game was in the Pit in Albuquerque, and it was like a 9 o'clock Eastern tip, which right. they all are
they
now.
They all are national now, title yeah.
game. Right. But back then it was a little unusual, and I was in the fourth grade, and I remember my parents telling me, you can't stay up to watch the whole game. And I was yeah. a sports nut, you know. Yeah. Oh, it's a national championship. And my dad said, well, what difference does it make? Houston's going to beat them by 20 points.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, it's true. And I went to bed, and I got up in the morning, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, my dad saying, you are not going to believe this. and he kind of looked over his shoulder and then gave me the, I tried to tell your mother. She wouldn't let me wake you up. So I missed it.
But it was one of those games that if it had gone till 4 in the morning, you would have stayed up yep. to watch it. Mm-hmm.
I felt like the rain delay in the Cubs-Indians game kind of took some of the oomph out of it.
It did. But it didn't take long to get it back, though, if you stayed up.
Right.
Yeah, they gave you a chance to go to bed.
This game comes to mind just because it was a local game. How late was the Indiana-Duke game? Because I remember watching that as a kid, and everyone in my family just kind of giving up. And I remember being in the shower, and my brother was kind of going to bed. And then all of a sudden, IU started coming back, and we all went back to the TV, and IU ended up beating Duke.
That was in Lexington, so that was probably a 7 or 8 okay. o'clock start, I think. Yeah. So 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the there's a 30 for 30 about North Carolina State and Houston. Yeah. It's called Survive in Advance. And of course you have the Valvano thing and all that. It was really amazing.
Have you seen the one on Phi Slamma Jamma?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
it's good.
They're all I don't know where they're getting all the
Okay, the best 30 for 30, which okay. one in your opinion?
You know, I see one. I just saw one Waiting for Tyson, the one Holyfield Tyson with you know, obviously, the second Holyfield Tyson was when he bit his ear and all that. But you forget that Holyfield was the heavyweight champ, but then he really wasn't because he never fought Tyson, and Tyson got beat by Buster Douglas unexpectedly, and then Tyson went to jail here in Indiana, and Holyfield had to, you know, wait to a couple years. Whatever 30 for 30 I watched most recently is my favorite one. Yeah,
Jeff.
I've seen the Reggie Miller 30 for 30 20 times.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably my favorite.
Miller time.
Yeah, it helps when you're kind of close to the story and you find out more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily a Pacers fan plus, and I really like it.
I like Reggie so much, and seeing him on camera like that and talking as freely as he was about the situation and what was going on behind the scenes.
Jake, were you there at Banker's Life or Conseco at the time when they premiered it? They premiered it.
No.
At the arena.
Oh, did they?
Yes, I was there.
You know, the only thing about the Reggie Miller one that I didn't like, and I mean, to your point, Chick, it's captivating because you lived it, right?
Right.
I mean, it was but I kind of felt like they introduced too many storylines without fully covering them. Like they kind of brought the Spike Lee versus like the insinuation of racism in Indiana versus Spike Lee into it very briefly, and then they just kind of glossed over it. And it's like, yeah, that kind of is its own whole different dynamic. You know, it got to the point where there was like little storms all over the place with it. Mm-hmm. But it was good. I mean, it was, and that was such a fun time to be living here. Have you seen The Two Escobars? You've seen that one, haven't you?
No, I haven't seen Harley.
I haven't seen The Two Escobars.
It's phenomenal. It's about Pablo Escobar, and it's basically about the 1994 Colombian World Cup team and all of the drug money that went into it. And Andres Escobar scored, what do they call it, a self goal or an auto goal?
Own goal.
And he ended up getting assassinated in Colombia over it. And then it also was about Pablo Escobar's influence into soccer. It was, and I'm not a soccer guy, but it was fascinating. Fascinating.
You know, Vibbert's a soccer guy, aren't you? Who do you cheer for? Manchester?
Oh, Man City.
Man City.
That's different than Man United, right?
Yeah, oh, they're bitter rivals.
Well, you get up early and go to a soccer bar and watch Man City,
The Manchester Derby, Man U versus Man City.
Where do you watch it?
Chatham.
Yeah, that's the place where everybody goes, right?
Yeah, Chatham or Union Jack.
Do you want to see my impersonation of every guy watching a soccer game?
Oh, yes.
You go into a bar, this is every guy watching a soccer game. This is, people can't see it because we're on a podcast, but it's just right here.
It's true. And they all have
for
a scarf.
For 2 hours.
They have a scarf on.
And they rise 3/4 way out of their seat, all excited, and then sit back down completely dejected.
Yes. Yep.
And maybe once a game, they do get excited.
Right.
Over 90 minutes, one time might happen.
I enjoy going because my friends go. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, I'd rather watch a different
one
sport.
One of the things, in all honesty, one of the things I think that is a huge advantage to soccer, I'm not making any original point here, but just like Chick was talking about with baseball, watching baseball or watching the NFL or whatever else, soccer, you know exactly how long it's going to take. Yep. No commercial breaks. Let's go. You know exactly what time you're going to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why people like it, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
You don't what about Catholics versus convicts, 30 for 30?
That's a good one.
Oh, man.
The U, that might be my favorite 30 for 30. That you know what? Such
the,
a good one.
Part one, yeah, they did a second, the U. Yeah, the first, okay. The U with all those guys, Santana Moss, and oh, my God.
Did you watch, I'll tell you what I think, though, was actually the most artistically done, and I thought it was excellent. June 19th, 1994.
I was just going to say that, and there's no narration.
Correct.
It's just all...
It interweaves four stories.
Yep, and it's what? It was Arnold Palmer's last U.S. Open.
Ken Griffey's... Ken Griffey tied Babe Ruth for fastest to 30 home runs in a season on June 19th.
Yeah, and...
The Bronco chase, obviously, and the New York Rangers Stanley Cup.
Program. Right, and it's just all interwoven and what was going on that day. Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a basketball game, or was that
I'm sorry, yeah, of course, the Rockets
Houston,
Knicks. Yeah.
Houston Knicks, okay. And... Because they would go to Bob Costas, and they had all this satellite. Yeah. What he uses is satellite.
Sure.
And I forget the name of the guy who did it, but he's an amazing documentary maker. You would have Bob Costas, obviously, off the air talking into his mic. Okay, Brokaw's going to be next to me on the right. Okay, in a two-shot. All right, okay. And then they'd go to hi, this is Bob Costas. Of course, what's going on? And now here's Tom Brokaw with the latest on the O.J. Simpson. I mean, and you forget how close, how guilty... O.J., whatever the verdict was, you forget. I mean, that was a suicide note that Kardashian was reading, and he was going to shoot himself in the Bronco outside of his front door in Brent. What was
Rockingham.
Yes. Rockingham. I mean, it was just.
There were two things about it that were masterfully done. Number one, earlier that day was the New York Rangers Stanley Cup Parade, and they masterfully take the commentary between the Bronco chase and the commentators during the parade saying, look at this, look at all the people, look at this. And it gets to the point where you can't distinguish whether you're listening to the audio commentary of the Bronco chase or of a celebratory parade, which is so perverse in its own right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the other thing that struck me, and I don't know if this was even intentional for them to point it, they didn't point it out, but what struck me is so ironic. OJ's suicide note was read by his best friend, who was a relative unknown at that time. And the suicide note, the core message in the suicide note from O.J. Simpson was, I have to go away because otherwise you, the press, are going to hound my children and force them to live in the spotlight the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And the guy who became a celebrity by reading that was Bob Kardashian.
Yep.
And instead what happened is all of that shifted from, we never hear about Sidney Simpson, but my God, you can't go five. You can't swing a dead cat without hearing about Kim Kardashian.
Yep. We talked about it on the air today.
Yeah,
yeah, the Kardashians. Yeah, she has a
inflatable. It could be anybody's butt.
Float, but
well,
yeah, that's an incredible butt, though. That's my point.
Before we go, I wanted to ask Jake a two-parter. So you've got to interview a lot of people being in TV and radio. Who's your favorite interview, and who's your secondly? Who's the one? Who would be your big white whale that you would like to get?
Well, that's a good question.
I kind of think I know your first one. I'm wondering if you'll say it.
Better be Chick McGee.
Okay. My favorite interview that I ever did was the doctor who, just because I found him fascinating, the doctor who was in the ER that performed on John Kennedy in Dallas.
That was a great interview, by the way.
That guy was fascinating.
Well done, yes.
There was a high school player when I was at Channel 6 named Anya Davis, who was a two-sport state champion and from the Indiana School for the Deaf, and I thought his story was remarkable. I would love to interview Bo Jackson. He's the only person I've ever encountered professionally where I was totally starstruck.
Okay.
And he's a mythical figure for people our age.
So yeah, probably, absolutely.
People forget how amazing he was.
Oh, unbelievable.
When he broke that bat over his knee, and then when he'd run up the outfield wall, and it was just amazing. And he
By all accounts, he ran a 4.1-something 40.
Yeah, unofficial, right?
Unofficial, yeah. Yeah, it,
well, the most remarkable story in his 30 for 30 is when they said that he was in a pool, and his high school coach came up and said he wanted to talk to him, and he jumped out of the pool. He jumped out of the water.
Oh, that's right, yeah. God. From a water-filled pool, jumped up the poolside. Yeah, yeah. What's up, Coach?
So basically, like the J.J. Watt, you've seen him jump real high onto the boxes or whatever. Right. He did that out of water.
There's videos of that on YouTube of people jumping out of the pool. Yeah, I've watched
impossible.
It. No, I've seen it.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm saying.
Where's the water level at? That's a good question. That's what I need to know.
Charles Manson to be on my list.
Okay. Better hurry.
I mean, obviously historical figures, people of true greatness, but in terms of sports figures, Bo Jackson.
Yeah. Does he do interviews, do you know?
I don't know.
That's what and you say that he's mythical to us, and you wonder if he doesn't do interviews to preserve that.
I think so. I think that's part of the mystique of him. Yeah. The 30 for 30 on him where I thought they really missed the boat was the game against the Raiders for Bo Jackson when he scored the long touchdown run and then ran into the tunnel.
Yeah.
I thought they should have ended the documentary with that play because of the symbolism of the fact that as soon as you realized what you had just witnessed, he was gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that, yeah.
And you never knew when he was coming
back.
Remember
the part in that documentary where the Alabama coach, was it Bear Bryant who kind of sort of talked down to him or what? He goes, I am never playing for Alabama. Yeah. There's no way. No way after what they said to him.
And they're probably thinking, should have handled that with a little better kid gloves.
When he got tackled and hurt his hip, it was just correct. It was just a plain old play.
Fairly routine play.
Yeah. Just like against the Bengals, right?
I think it was the Bengals,
Tulsa's DBs jump out of pool vertically, 3 feet of water.
Who is?
Tulsa's defensive backs.
So he's...
Boom. That's
My God.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that is...
Are they going to have to...
step up and do it?
Are they going to have to do something about the NFL as far as how big and how fast... almost everyone is now.
That's the problem. I mean, right? Honestly, Chick, I think the level of injuries that you see, the concussions, everything else, I mean, as Bill Polian used to always say, it's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport.
Absolutely.
And you have bigger, stronger, faster all the way across the board. I don't know what you can do other than work on the equipment.
I remember plainly when Joe, and I know this is a Redskin connection story, but I remember plainly when Jacoby... the tackle for the Redskins, he was like 6'6", 305 or whatever.
And that was unheard of.
And
right?
Unheard of. Well, he can't move at that weight. There's no way. You know, and on that same line, Bostic, the center, was like, I don't know, 6'2", 240, 250, whatever. I mean, Joe Jacoby, by 30 pounds, was the biggest offensive lineman. And now everybody is over 300 pounds. Everybody. Yeah. And what's his name from the guy the Browns will probably draft, the linebacker? 4'6".
Jarrett?
Yeah, Jarrett. 4'6", 4'6", 440, and he's 270, and that's insane.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I mean, they're going to have to put governors on people like they do.
Stripers? You have stripers? Like the fat kids at the
they're
Y?
They're going to have to put X's on their helmets, and they're not going to be able to tackle with anybody. Yeah, that's what I think. Jeff, what do you think?
I agree.
Well, Jake, thank you for stopping by. It was a pleasure.
I very much appreciate you guys having me in. It's very flattering, actually.
As I told Derek, you guys are going to have to be on at the same time next time.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Oh, God.
I don't know. That sounds good. We'll just let Derek know when it's his turn to talk, just like we do, right?
That seems like a fair idea.
I think we could have Jake, we could do a whole show just on his travel adventures, movies.
Fascinating stories and amazing people.
I don't say movie sets, but play like you. I know you went to the laundromat in Arkansas.
Where they did Sling Blade.
Sling Blade.
And last time I was in L.A., I went to the La Bianca house, site of the Manson murders.
Yeah, stuff like that.
And the next door neighbor, when I was asking her about it, said, actually, if you don't mind, I've got some furniture I need moved. And so I ended up helping her move furniture. And I'm thinking, that seems trusting, right?
Considering
I'm here to see about the Manson murders that took place next door, but please invite me into your home to help move
I'm
your
doing
furniture.
A little homework.
Yeah.
Why, sure, ma'am. I'll come help you right now. That'd be cool, man. Oh, my.
Was that, now that monkey was kind Ruby, of a little crazy?
Might have been
crazy monkey?
Monkey Manson. I don't know.
Manic monkey.
Might have been. Look for Jake. Listen for Jake Quarry on 97.5 and 1260 WNDE with the sports show in the afternoon starting at 3
He's Eastern. Very active on Twitter.
He's very active on Twitter. And you're verified?
Jake Quarry.
At I Jake am. Quarry. JakeQuery.
Yeah, you got it.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jeff. This has been the Chick McGee Show on Podcast One. Good night, everybody.
Ooh.